sure you're never gonna catch a break, and the tears and rivers running down your face. Yeah, when your faith is low and you got no.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar, and what is our third straight day of recording.
Yes.
Even though you'll be listening to this probably on a Saturday.
We're basically, yeah, we basically have the work ethic of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No, we don't.
I mean, it's almost, all right.
At least not when it comes to physical fitness.
That's true. Like, she puts us to shame.
Yes. She works out more vigorously and often than I ever have, even when I was well.
It hurt me to watch. I was like, ooh, I could feel the glutes tightening. My glutes, not her glutes. My glutes.
I bet she's got an ass on her. I bet I know. That's what we're doing today. We're covering another documentary feature with a backstory. And the reason we weren't going to do this originally, but there's a backstory to it. We'll get into all of it at the top here. We're doing the OSB, the Oscar Sprint Profile, for the documentary RBG. Falls in line with some other documentaries we've done covering what might be nominated for the best documentary feature at the Academy Awards. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Yeah, also Mike here. This has been nominated recently for a couple of precursors. We'll get into it. We have On the Basis of Sex expanding to 2,000 theaters with Felicity Jones, Armie Hammer this coming weekend. So we figured we kind of got a window that just reopened to review RBG. We've neglected it for a long period of time.
But
I think after these BAFTA nominations, Michael, it makes some sense to go after.
Certainly relevant. If you've not been with us before for an OSP, then what we do is we have a two-part review in every Oscar Sprint Profile. We have a non-spoiler part in the first half and a spoiler-filled part in the second half. If you've not seen the movie yet that we will be discussing, don't worry. The first half is spoiler-free. We just tell you about the production backstory and characters. The second half is all spoiler-filled. You'll get a dance breakdown to warn you, but to go off and finish your setup there now, finally, yes, there is a whole new world that this RBG is relevant for, and that is that the BAFTA noms came out. When we did our BAFTA nominations, we purposely left out the documentary category, knowing this was coming, and we left it out because RBG was nominated for a BAFTA, and the perennial prohibitive favorite in the category, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary,
dominating,
which has won every award in the precursor, not nominated on the BAFTAs.
I can't believe it. We have Free Solo, RBG, McQueen, They Shall Not Grow Old, which I've heard good things about, and Three Identical Strangers. Those are your five at the BAFTAs, and it's a glaring omission.
I'm shocked. I guess it makes sense, and a lot of people from across the pond on Twitter came out and said, look, Mr. Rogers isn't syndicated here. He's not a big deal. He's not anything that we can relate to. We don't really know his story. Okay, I get that. At the same time, my response there and now is, if the BAFTA exists just to celebrate the best in film and present it to the British audience every year, you would think that the voting body certainly saw the favorite in the category and then decided it wasn't worthy on its own merits.
Michael, did they watch the cartoons? Did you really watch the cartoons? Because you don't need to know about Fred Rogers. I didn't watch a lot of Fred Rogers, but the cat cartoons will make you cry.
Yeah.
They're that good. Morgan Neville's an Oscar winner.
Yeah. And they interviewed Yo-Yo Ma, for Christ's sake.
Yo-Yo Ma? Oh, come on.
But instead of in lieu of Won't You Be My Neighbor being nominated, the BAFTAs did decide to nominate a documentary centered around arguably the most important woman in America right now?
In the world, perhaps?
Maybe, right?
Ever born. No, she's very important, and this is an important movie. We're going to analyze and distinguish importance and how good this movie is. I've reviewed this a few times, Michael, and those few reviews, I've been a little down on it. I'll give you a little preview today right now before I start. I'm higher on it after studying it. So this was a fun study and definitely a fun movie.
It's chock full of information, certainly. We're going to get into all the historical and political relevance of this going on. But like we usually start these Oscar Sprint Profiles, also Mike's going to start with a cast and crew, which is a little difficult to do in a documentary. But here we go.
I'll manage. Directed by Julie Cohen and Betsy West. Cohen is known from American Veteran, The Sturgeon Queens, Nidifilela Layla.
Say that again, please.
Nitty Falela.
Go ahead.
Ukukola.
Oh,
no. I am sorry. I should have looked that one up.
It's not a Felicio and a Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
Ruining this poor woman's life's work. We are
and
very sorry.
And she's famous. Yes. A thousand times more famous than me and Mike and I, anyway.
He's Italian. I'm Polish. The linguistics of things don't do well for us, yes.
And the unforgettable Hampton family. She's also been a producer on Dateline NBC. That's Julie Cohen.
I love Dateline, man. I absolutely love Dateline. It so gets nitty. It's so true crime based. Okay. It's having its moment. I love it.
Oh, I've watched that before ever. As well.
Okay.
Sure. Yes. Nod my head. Betsy West is a longtime producer known from The Lavender Scare, Constantine's Sword, and Makers, Women Who Make America, where one of her subjects was, of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Certainly has made America, that's for sure.
RBG, the documentary includes interviews from Bill Clinton, Gloria Steinem, and famed plaintiffs of Ginsburg cases, Sharon Frontiero, Lily Ledbetter, and Steven Weisenberg. If you've just become aroused by that list of names, then you are probably a lawyer and a liberal.
I am rock hard.
Story inception and production notes here. All right, a few years back, West and Cohen asked Ruth Bader Ginsburg if they can interview her for a feature-length documentary about her life. And during promotional interviews, both directors kept saying that the first answer they got from Ginsburg was very specific. Not yet. So Ginsburg.
Interesting.
That's interesting. I never heard that before as well. So they spoke to her a short time later, and Ginsburg basically gave them permission and a few leads to interview her family, friends, colleagues, people who would know about the important cases.
Drop her debut album,
and anybody who would know enough to get the story that they wanted to get across. And then they finally scheduled an interview with Ginsburg 2 years from the time of this phone call.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Well, good for one, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, saying that I don't think I'm worthy of it yet. Obviously she was, but that just shows you how humble the source is.
But she's that busy, RBG.
Well, sure, of course. She's a Supreme Court justice. They don't really have days off. And good for West and Cohen for staying after it and stick-to-itiveness.
Yes, one of the hardest interviews to get, I would imagine. Two-year waiting list.
Yeah, no question. Wow. Oh my God.
So RBG has been in the news lately, Michael, unfortunately. Because
her rib has.
Yeah, another health scare. She had surgery for lung cancer, essentially. And the good news is doctors expect her on the bench again in February. It seems like she'll make a full recovery, or she'll make enough of a recovery.
Yeah, well, if everyone who's worried about her physical health, the better news is that she's actually a cyborg.
She
from outer
might
space.
Be half robot, right, just so. Based on those workouts. Mm-hmm. Anyway, both directors worked previously with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mentioned Makers for Betsy West there. And then for this documentary, Michael, they only recorded her for a total of 20 hours. That's kind of low.
It's low, but it makes sense, too, because, again, we talk about the busy schedule and her exposure and availability. She doesn't seem like someone that would have a lot to say about pop culture either. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you're going to sit down with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, your conversation is going to steer towards the political realm and rule of law because she just is that vibrant of a mind, of a legal mind. So she never heard of SNL for Christ. You know, she wasn't familiar with it. So I don't know that there would have been a lot of fertile ground for a run-of-the-mill pop culture documentary outside of what we were presented anyway. She probably gave them just enough time.
So there's no small talk, just like in real life.
Sure.
Their
I don't think so. I wouldn't
expect
that.
They could get to the point. The thing is, like, as a documentarian, don't you got to have the opportunity to pry some more? I wonder if they're at a bit of a disadvantage with this subject because, A, they had to, without interviewing her, without being able to pry into the stories a little more, like I just said, they had to get all the background information and do a lot of legwork on this project. Then they had to do their interview with her, and then they probably filled a lot of stuff in to make the narrative work for this storyline. They had to do it kind of ass backwards in a way.
That's a good point. That's a good point from a filmmaking perspective. Sure. I just think, you know, I don't know that she's necessarily one that's an open book that much to begin with.
True.
So I think 20 hours in her mind is like, that gave you plenty of time.
Right. But you think about Three Identical Strangers. They're like, all right, here's act one because I'm talking to the
entire
first
life
stranger.
Story, yeah.
I'm talking to the first one of those brothers, and that is the beginning of my movie. And then I'll schedule all the other, you know, interviews, and it's to support that one narrative. So this is a slightly different scenario, high degree of difficulty, as we'll talk about. Michael, you have some specs.
I think I do. Yeah, this is RBG. This film came out in Sundance in 2018, had its debut January 21st in Sundance, went wide May 4th, 2018. Mike already told you this. Betsy West and Julie Cohen are not only the directors, they are apparently a team, as they both get directed by credits, but they also are the lone producers attached to this. The music was done by Miriam Cutler.
They made the phone call. They did a lot.
Music was done by Miriam Cutler. It also has a nominated song that a lot of people expect to be nominated for the Oscars.
I've had it in my head all day long.
Yeah, and the Jennifer Hudson song, I'll Fight. Cinematography was done by Claudia Raschke, edited by Carla Gutierrez. The production company, as Mike's going to break out in the Dream Girl song in a minute, production company listed at CNN Films, Storyville Films, and Participant Media, distributed by Magnolia Pictures. It's only got a 97-minute runtime on a PG rating. It's actually got coming in at the 22nd best box office for a documentary of all time in that it made $14 million plus. So that's a pretty significant number.
It's been a huge year for documentaries.
It really has. They're getting more time in the theaters. I wonder, it would be an interesting discussion to talk about if documentaries are getting more theater runs because those mid-budget movies are transitioning to streaming services.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's an opening up for that. I was just thinking about that today. Talk about some
specs.
Plus
old people, Mike.
Okay, sure.
Old people like documentaries.
Look, man,
old people. I go into a documentary, and there's just like 20 old people there.
The old people are so much more capable. This movie made me feel so bad about myself and my physical well-being. Critical reception. Metascore has got a 72 right now. That's respectable, right in the middle of the road. IMDb is a 7.6 out of 10 on 4,400-plus votes there. It is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes with a 95%. Average critical score is a 7.5 out of 10 there for the critical score. There has been 153 critical reviews. 145 of those have been positive. 78% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes on 1,700-plus reviews. Average score is 3.8 out of 5.
High audience score. Yeah,
it's very well received. We'll talk about some awards profile for it. National Board of Review for Best Documentary of the Year, Critics' Choice Documentary Award for Most Compelling Living Subject, Hollywood Music and Media Awards for Best Original Song for Diane Warren and Jennifer Hudson's "I'll Fight." It won the Elaine May Award with the Philadelphia Critics Circle. It's the Directors Guild, Producers Guild, BAFTA, Satellite, Oscar shortlist nominations. All of those are in the best documentary categories, all those being nominations, of course, and Critics' Choice Nom for Best Original Song as well. So this is pretty much a loaded movie. This is right in line with any of the big multiple nominee movies that we're going to talk about.
And yet, like the Critics Associations, Michael, nominations but not wins. It's very few wins. It was a surprise to see the National Board of Review pick it.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think
but that kind of goes in line with the theme of award season this year, right? Everything is so wide open, and just when we thought at least we can rely on the documentary feature category to be an open and shut case, the BAFTAs come in and say, no, no, no.
You know, and also tough times. And this is like a superhero movie. This is a happy
film.
This
depending on your perspective, sure.
Yeah, I mean, for liberals like this, we feel great after watching this movie. So if it's a feel-good movie, it's going to do better in these trying times, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, especially with liberals probably, as we talked about in our conversation in our Vice OSP, how liberals are kind of the ones that have more available to them in movies right now anyway.
Right. Okay, plot premise, Mike. The exceptional life and career of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has developed a breathtaking legal legacy while becoming an unexpected pop culture icon. To get into some expectations here, Michael, as an attorney.
Yes.
How do you go into a movie like this? Do you expect to learn something? Do you want to you want more of the behind-the-scenes stuff?
I wanted more behind-the-scenes stuff. Okay. I think for the most part, by and large, my takeaway from this, and I think we're similar, we were talking before we hit record, this was a puff piece about the woman. Which is totally fine if that's what you're going to do. I just personally was expecting, and I got my hopes up when I saw the names of the cases flash by. I wanted more about what she did in those cases and her thought process, which she's totally able to talk about. Maybe she chose not to for personal reasons, or maybe they just weren't questions asked of her. But that's what I thought we were getting, more in the legal working mindset. But this concentrates, I would say, more fully on the pop culture sign. And with that being a fact, it's also why I said I think that makes sense that she thought 20 hours as far as her exposure to the documentary makers was probably enough if it wasn't going to be this deep legal insight.
Yeah, you're not going to carry a 97-minute through line through a documentary out of a 20-hour interview. It's very hard to get at that.
Sure.
Unless you're Frost,
right.
Nixon, you got Sam Rockwell in your corner.
Right.
Maybe you can handle that. But basically, they're scheduling some time at the gym, some time at the opera, some time talking to her one-on-one. So they're crafting.
That's more palatable to a wide audience.
Yeah, but they're crafting a lot of exposition work with those court cases early on, and we'll get into it in spoilers, but I definitely think the degree of difficulty was high in this one. So I gave this movie a hard time a few episodes throughout this award season when I was comparing and contrasting this best documentary category in all our Oscar race updates here, Michael. In fact, I think one of the main reasons we haven't reviewed it thus far is because I saw it months ago and I kind of wrote it off a little bit. I'm glad we were able to come back to it after these nominations have been, you know, swirling. And I do think it's a really strong film, and I'm happy to talk about it going into the Felicity Jones movie. And I think it's a nice time for it. She had another health scare. I mean, can she make it 2 more years? Oh, my God.
Hold on. She has to.
Please,
she
has to.
But, and there's also, I was reading up on recent history about how even if she's basically invalid, as long as she's got, you know, a pulse, she's voting, she's able to vote, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Oh, my God. Just freaking me out. Yeah. Anyway, I will say.
Who are you voting for in 2020? Yeah, go ahead.
I will say that my opinion of the movie has risen since being able to study it. Like I said, if it's a puff piece, then this is a glorious puff piece, and it's an entertaining puff piece, and I enjoyed every minute of my last two watches since I seen it months after my first watch. So I'm glad to revisit this movie. I think this is an important film, and sometimes, especially in the documentary category, important films tend to get nominated over the better made film.
Issue movies like you always talk about.
And is that really a bad impulse? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of good intentions there from the Academy. Now, again, taste is subjective, so they can make an argument against me. But I would say that in many a year, we have the boring issue movie getting nominated over the entertaining, maybe that's all it is, the entertaining popular film. Like last year's Jane doesn't get nominated, and I'm snoring through a couple of those other documentaries, even though their cause and their subject is super compelling and super important. It's just not as well made. And I don't think you can win that argument against me. Let's go. But look, I mean, this to me feels like, just to tease my review if I haven't already done so, VH1 Behind the Music, 30 for 30 NFL Network, Super Bowl things. This movie felt like one of those to me.
I'll disagree.
It's like a Lifetime Achievement Award speech.
Right. It's a Lifetime Achievement Award speech. But the 30 for 30s and the VH1s and Behind the Music and all that, they show, I mean, there's a downside to this.
All right, let's say, here's what it is. It's a Super Bowl documentary on the NFL Network.
Sure, okay. That I agree with.
Where they're all just talking about how great the other guys are.
And, I mean, this is a puff piece, but there's no issue, there's nothing wrong necessarily per se with picking an issue movie. I don't think there's anything wrong per se with making a puff piece. It's something that is highlighting something important that should be highlighted, and it is giving this voice and this wider base to this subject that's going to be a very monumental person in history. So yeah, that's totally fine. Especially because there's so few subjects anymore that maybe objectively
are worthy of a puff piece.
Well, and don't have that dark side. She doesn't seem like she has a lot of skeletons.
There are things in this movie that I'll get it to. I wanted them to dive into. There's no way they're going to dive into them in 20 hours.
Right.
Let's get into production values before I keep rambling. The editing is brilliant. Super entertaining.
The editing. I thought this was a very professional-looking, sounding documentary.
I love the documentary filmmaker's job, because you got all of the footage that you must sift through, right? And you're interweaving, like, interviews with her husband from years ago.
Yep.
And that archival footage is being showcased in here with the audio from the Supreme Court. I just love how they put all together all those court case recaps.
It sounds so insurmountable, because I don't think, I don't know, I've never had experience in the production of a documentary, but I wouldn't think you can go there and necessarily be sure what your through line is for your story you're going to show until you have amassed all this footage from all these different sources and interviews. Then to make sure you know
what
you're
going
to storyboard
project
and go back through the footage to make this coherent film. I am in awe of it.
We do research projects that take sometimes 5 and 6 hours for us. whether we're presenting easily. An OSP or something. I can't imagine having to do whatever months of research on a particular subject like they must have done to find all these brilliant clips and then to actually go and film what they needed to film. I love montage filmmaking. I love music videos when I was a kid.
When it's effectively done, it's one of the most effective means of communication. Right. I agree. But there are a lot of times we see, not that this movie doesn't. I think this movie is a very effective piece.
Yes.
Even if it is just straight propaganda for her, I mean, it does its job beautifully because I am in love with her now, more so than I was previously. But yeah, you're right. I think that's a very effective way to communicate a message when it's done properly. This movie does it properly.
And this is a feel-good movie. There's a lot of fun anecdotes.
Colorful characters, too.
And the interviews they chose, the subjects they chose to get into performances in a minute. It's really not a performance piece, Michael, but...
She's not putting on a performance. That woman is just what you see is what you get with RBG.
Yeah, but you also have their family being interviewed, the kids being interviewed.
Grandchildren.
And her and her husband, the archival footage of them together felt like a cutout from the interviews in When Harry Met Sally.
It was adorable.
It was irresistible.
Well, how dare you make that comparison? That's a terrible movie.
What's the great interview footage? Keep rolling forward here.
The over-under on the number of times you and I say you archival.
You hold grudges, but
he's a stalker, Mike. I'm not going to do this again.
Archival is a word that should be used a minimum 7 times in documentary
film. All right, I think we're at 5 already. So, yes, I agree.
Archival.
I was surprised, speaking of performance, if you want to talk about the individual people talking on film, the access they were able to get, casually having a conversation with Bill Clinton in one of his offices.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal for relatively, I don't know that they're very well-known filmmakers. Certainly, they have a resume and a CV.
I wonder if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is like, hey, you know who you should call talk to? Call
in some favors, yeah. You know,
Bill Clinton, I'll tell him to talk to you.
Yeah, right. probably the case. Maybe not, though. I don't know either way, but I was very impressed with the depth of source they went to and were able to gain access to and show right from here. And again, weaving the current interviews with the past archival footage to make that through line. I think it was a beautifully done job, and the performances kind of do jump off the page.
Screen is what we're looking at, right? Screen and page. Script thoughts, Michael. Look, something like Won't You Be My Neighbor, Three Identical Strangers, Free Solo. I think those filmmakers are striving to use most of their technique to communicate conflict within the story. This movie makes me feel like a lot of the technique, when they get flashy with the technique, it's not to communicate necessarily conflict, it's to be more complimentary of her, or to kind of move you past conflict in a way at times.
I'll go even maybe more negative. I didn't see a whole lot of like, wow, great job shooting that type things. I thought everything was very plain on its face. Everyone was saying very complimentary things, and the message was very nice and heartwarming, especially if you are a liberal. But I thought it was just very matter-of-factly laid out. Like the audio stuff that she was putting forth when she gave her dissents in court, it's just like it's shown up on a Dateline screen, oddly enough. Go figure, right? But it just showed up right there, and there was no like really background music.
But you could stand up and clap throughout that whole presentation, throughout the court case recaps, right?
Sure.
Because it's always on the up and up. Like when they use technique, having the audio over all the Supreme Court montage stuff and all the superimposition, and there's a lot of technique there, it is to kind of show rising action, and it's really a rising action dominant technical emphasis.
There is a lot of technique in this, I will agree that it's done within an extreme liberal slant, because her dissenting with like the Hobby Lobby opinion, it's supposed to be a negative.
Again,
the Hobby Lobby's opinion is supposed to be a negative shown. Right?
Won't You Be My Neighbor? They hired an artist to make scary cat cartoons to give you the stakes of what's going on between Fred Rogers and his TV show and all of the other stuff that will rot your brains out there, kids. And they interweave all of the really showy technical stuff when they have to orient you with the stakes and the conflict. That's not this movie.
It's probably a matter of production value too. Production budget, I should say, not value. Production budget.
True. Possible. But I also think that they had the high degree of difficulty with the schedule.
No question. No question. Not scheduling, storyline, no question.
So, quick Oscar lines here, Michael. BAFTA gives it to this one over Won't You Be My Neighbor, like we said.
Wild.
At the Oscars, they're all in the shortlist. There's a bunch of issue movies, Hale County, this morning, this evening, mm-hmm. on her shoulders. There's a bunch of issue movies that have really yet to take hold beyond the critical circles at this point in time. And I wonder if the Academy will feel like too many popular films, like Three Identical Strangers is a very popular film. I think it's thoroughly well made. Free Solo is about an athletic feat of strength and will and desire and insanity. And I wonder if that, I think it's a phenomenal movie. I wonder if that's going to be important enough to be nominated if it's getting pushed to the back. Won't You Be My Neighbor? In my opinion, it's one of the best documentaries in the last 5 years. And
we see it similarly for sure. As far as the popularity aspect goes, or, you know, do you think they're playing popularity overall? Do you think they're more so playing politics if the Academy were to keep something like this?
Well,
out?
This movie's narrative, RBG's narrative, can play the political.
Sure. I'd argue it very much does.
And the Academy would love, like, who doesn't want to champion Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
especially
now?
Conservatives.
Good point. Who else in the liberal wing of things doesn't want to champion her right now?
Right.
Well, we all do.
Sure.
And in the Academy, predominantly liberal Academy, they want to give a standing ovation to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What could save this Oscar broadcast more than Ruth Bader Ginsburg showing up and walking down the red carpet?
Look, they gave it to Kobe last year, the documentary, or one of the short documentary, because Kobe showed up. You know, I mean, there was a precedent for wanting to reward your heroes because you don't get to interact with them a lot. Now, again, that's playing not only the political game in the nation's politics, but that's playing the Academy's political game as well.
Just LA sports fandom,
right? But so it could go a couple of ways there. Now, again, if we're talking just the best movies, is this one of the best documentaries I've seen of the year? It's not on the level of the big. I haven't seen Free Solo yet. It's not on the level of Three Identical Strangers or Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's not on the level of Free Solo. But again, this category for the Academy is going
to
have five.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could be. You could be totally. This could be a long con for no one's perverse enjoyment but your own. But there's two spots open, right? I think this is on the level of something like a Quincy or maybe a Hale County this morning. This could be in the conversation.
Could
right?
be, but you know, something like On Her Shoulders, I've seen that getting momentum lately. You know, might get in over Three Identical. There might be an undeniable issue movie is what I'm saying.
Sure.
So if you have an undeniable issue movie and then you want Ruth Bader Ginsburg at the Oscars because you want to give her a standing ovation, it's going to come into play.
And this could have been more of an issue movie than it is, too. This was, I mean, it was right there in front of you. You're talking about the freaking cases, you know?
Yes.
I mean, so maybe that's, they see that as missed opportunity. A lot of ways that this Oscar lens could go. Gun to your head, at the end of the day, do you think this gets nominated or no?
I do. I was kind of pushing it to you a couple days ago when we were considering what to do at the end of this week. We'll have more OSPs coming. And we were like, after the BAFTA nom, I think we got to do this one. And I think it's worth it. And on the basis of Sex coming out, you know, it's a movie we wanted to see. Felicity Jones was being talked about in Oscar circles for a while there, even though that didn't come to pass. I do think that's you know, it's super relevant. She just got cleared of another health scare.
Especially with the widening Academy. I don't think there's any doubt. The more diverse you get, the more people you include. I don't know how. She is the champion. I mean, she has so many hopes and dreams riding on her alone, literally just to stay alive, which is a little morbid to say, but it's true. But I think there's no doubt that the more inclusive that you have in a body, the more you're going to end up championing progressive ideals. And she is basically the ideal progressive right now.
Absolutely. Some final thoughts here, Michael. I needed this documentary. I watched it 3 times, like I said. I'm going to read The Notorious RBG next on Audible. I just bought that book, and I'm excited to learn more about this heroic person's life. Everybody has some disagreements with her. There was like some things underneath the surface. I'll get into a few in spoilers where I didn't, you know, I kind of wanted to hear more of her opinions on. Yep. She's compromised many a times in terms of her opinions on the Supreme Court, and that was kind of glossed over. But I think this is a strong movie. I'm going to give it a high grade. Bottom line, to me, it's not a best documentary in this strong year of awesome documentaries.
Certainly not one of the top two right now for me. I give it a respectable grade. It is tough for me when we're on the heels of saying how Hollywood needs to be so, needs to strive to be more bipartisan, that we have another straight propaganda liberal piece. Again, it's fine if that's what your goal was, and right, you've achieved that goal. Congratulations. And I think, again, people like you and me see this, and we do. We're like, this is awesome. This woman is awesome.
Right.
This is great subject matter. But there's no doubt that it's one-sided. That's, it's irrefutable. Is it going to be nominated? I am with you. I tend to agree it will be making the field of five. Mm-hmm. So let's, I guess, hit the music and let's get into spoilers.
Let's dance. Watch it.
Spoilers ahead.
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
This is the spoiler section for the documentary RBG, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar in our Oscar Sprint profile of said documentary. If you have not seen the movie yet, and if you don't want to know the ins and outs, the twists and turns of the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this is a good place for you to stop, hit pause, go watch the doc. You can come back, and we'll be here to fill you in afterwards if you've seen the movie already, if you just are interested to hear what we have to say, or if we've hyped up the first half and the non-spoiler section so much that you cannot possibly go another minute without hearing the twists and turns. This is where you want to be. It's all spoilers all the time. The RBG documentary, the Oscar Sprint profile, brought to you by Mike, Mike, and Oscar. Michael, I have not done a full push-up in probably 7-8 years. This woman's doing 23 times a week.
Yeah, real push-ups, too.
She is a... Is she the strongest person? Can she beat Pacquiao? She could beat Pacquiao.
She could go the distance.
How much does a Money Mayweather RBG boxing match make? Just the draw on pay-per-view.
It would make an absurd amount of money. If it was just like a celebrity death match MTV version of it, like, you think about how much the money would
have. It's half boxing, half
the fictional
intellect
version of that would make a lot of money.
Yeah.
We should write that. Very strange conversation.
It is.
Start off the spoilers.
It's where exactly I'm in my comfort zone. I think that was kind of one of the more impressive things that did come to light as far as a pop culture impact, seeing just how badly she wants to stay in shape, which is derived from health scares that she's had.
Yeah, I love seeing that. I love seeing, and she's doing all good stuff too. Like, she's doing, you know, the back rows. She's planking.
Planking. She's 83. She's doing full planks,
and it's a good plank. Like, she's got her back straight, and she's got those elbows tucked, and she's really getting a plank in. She's fighting off the osteoporosis with the workouts day in, day out. We need her to stay alive, and she's working her ass off to do it. I mean, and everybody's health is different, but she is still churning through, and just never mind the physical capacities she has, the mental capacity. Like, she is sharp.
Amazing.
In all those interviews.
Yes.
And she's very measured, and you think about the workload she's got. Oh my God.
Like, stunning. It's absolutely stunning. And she, her work, I guess, schedule is hit on how she, since, and the big, I guess the big spoiler of the spoiler section is that she was madly in love with her husband, and he ends up succumbing to cancer himself. He dies, he passes. So since she's been alone the last few years, since 2010, I think it was when he passed, her work schedule, her daughter commented, was like, she will go to the court, she will come home, exercise, work until 4 a.m.,
yeah,
and then sleep and do it all again. So, and this is woman's doing this every day, and she works herself so to exhaustion that her weekends consist of catching up on sleep. I need
insanity.
A nap to make it through a day, Mike.
It's insane. It's insane how productive she is and how long she's been doing this, Michael. She might be a cyborg, like you said. In terms of the filmmaking, though, the husband's death is a perfect example, even though it's probably the least criticizable, because you think about that whole montage of the husband. It is 99.5% positive.
Gosh.
And then they basically, for like 30 seconds, talk about his illness. And then they show how she's getting over his illness. And they're talking about it in very positive tones about how she's overcoming his death and her grief. And it's like a glancing line. Whereas in Won't You Be My Neighbor in Free Solo, I'm squirming in my seat because I got a little cat and I got a somber score. And I got the documentary filmmaker Morgan Nebel spending as much time talking about the stakes and talking about the negatives and talking about the process being difficult.
The downside,
and
yeah.
Showing the kids who vex this guy and showing how hard he's having to work after hours to mentor these kids and to actually, you know, be kind of a child psychologist to these kids. And Free Solo, you have all the grueling amount of time with the mother, with the girlfriend, with the filmmakers, and with three identical strangers. They have entire acts,
yes,
that are, after you get through the fun times, it's a roller coaster, yes, where you're dealing with some tough shit. This movie could have dwarfed all those other movies in stakes.
Yeah, and that's the disappointing part for me, is that it's all laid out there. And even the marriage, Marty was a complete unknown to me, her husband.
Right.
I didn't know anything
me
about
neither.
Him.
Yeah, sure.
And he was basically portrayed, and maybe they did have the prototypical, like a perfect marriage, but
right,
that's how it came across. You're right. That's what this documentary was lacking for me, why I say it's such propaganda. There was no downside to their marriage, to her work, outside of her dissenting, which is part of the job.
Yeah. Like, let's see him storming in after a week of her not coming home, or three days of not coming home. Let's hear the intern or the person who worked at the office tell the story of when he threw her over his shoulder and dragged her home. And let's hear that story. And that's negative, and they probably fought about it. And you're not going to get that in a puff piece documentary. In Fred Rogers, you got a lot of time with the people that he hurt, with the people that he didn't embrace fully,
sure,
early. I mean, they spent a good amount of time talking about some problems there. They glanced over a few that they couldn't go too deep into, like the wife talking about the husband. But I do like, we were mad at little things from that documentary. Like, we wanted, you know, we wanted the son to talk shit about his father.
Yeah,
never happened.
Well, it was
almost
right there.
Happened.
Yeah, it was at the brim.
But in this movie, there's really no one. So what crystallized it for me was all the Scalia stuff. Like, think about how positive that entire sequence
was. I'm
going
to disagree,
right,
with you here, but keep going.
We have all the fun stuff that they do together, right? They go on the elephant. They go,
sure,
they go to the opera together.
They're like the odd
they
couple.
Work
Scalia made that
the,
joke, yeah.
They go on talk shows and they talk about how they're the odd couple. They talk about fun stuff. And then the breezing through of their differences in opinion, how they view the Constitution, all right? And this is the substance of the conversation. They're friends, and yet they can view the Constitution, one, as a quote-unquote traditionalist, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg is basically, you know, like a Bible, like how you do read the Bible, as a fundamentalist, the word is true, or as something more of a metaphor where you kind of take
it
as...
Is it a living, breathing document, or is it something that you're supposed, right, to interpret as what the founders made it as? Yeah,
and
that's the quandary of law school.
In the structure of the film, we have Scalia stuff, then we have Ruth Bader Ginsburg stuff with the hammer. And I just wished they had more of a back and forth. They left it more open. Like, say, hey, here are the two arguments. This is the arguments that
like
we've been...
Like the Gore-Vidal documentary.
Yeah,
with it.
Think,
yeah,
about those two arguments back from the Federalists versus the... Back with Jefferson versus John Adams.
Yeah.
That argument has been the fundamental back and forth.
Sure.
In American history, and there's nothing wrong. The Ginsburg-Scalia argument, there's a lot to that. You don't need the character who worked with Ginsburg. I forget her name, but she's a very famous lawyer in this movie. She shows up throughout at the end saying, I couldn't be friends with a conservative nutcase. And that's why we got to throw the barb for the hammer at the end of that segment.
Okay, so two things about that. One, I think you're saying you wanted to see more of a conflict between the two of them.
Yeah.
I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt. And this was one of my reactions in watching it too, because as when you get so many asinine, not saying anyone's opinion is asinine, but you deal with so much shit in your law career, whether it's from judges, opposing counsel, people you work with, etc., that she said she's able to compartmentalize. That is a really real thing. You're able to separate the work from the person, because
well,
you have to survive.
That's great, but why can't we have that be a through line throughout the movie, rather than an anecdote in the third act? Because you could have had that as a CDE story and have it weave throughout and then show their friendship at the end.
Sure.
Narrative decisions here, I don't get
my
that.
My answer to that is, secondly, that's not... And again, you're hitting on my expectation. I wanted that.
Yeah.
That's not what this movie ever was. And to its credit, it's not what it ever purported to be once,
right,
you started watching it.
I agree. But just, I'm thinking missed opportunities.
Yes, I agree.
That's a big
one.
How did they become friends?
I agree.
How did their arguments get so heated? I mean, these are all questions that I want to read the book. Like, I bought that book because I want to read it. I'm dying to know the genesis of their friendship and how everything progressed.
I also imagine this had to have been filmed after Scalia's passing. If they were on a waiting list for 2 years, I think Scalia passed about 2.5 years ago, so they must have just missed it. Because he would have been another fascinating interview.
Well, it was cool that they, you know, talked to Scalia's son. Yes. They talked to the Republican senators, and they talked to the, I think it was the president of Scalia's law school.
Who gave the anti-RBG opinion. They did try, and I think that's what's so frustrating for both of us. They tried to present counter-arguments, but there's just, they were so glossed over.
Glossed over, and they get the opportunity, the soundbite is there, except, and then you throw in at the end, I wouldn't be friends with a liberal nutcase, or a conservative nutcase. I mean, why do you need that at the end? Why
maybe
are we
to juxtapose
shade?
how regular people are versus the unique mindset a Supreme Court justice needs to have. I could see that being a case for just playing devil's advocate. I'm just trying to throw things
versus
out there.
The woman who's a great lawyer and can call people liberal conservative nutcases, because we got plenty of liberal nutcases out there too, folks. Again,
that's for sure.
I had a whole podcast of advice about hypocrisy, and it's bad. It's not classy, and it's just, I don't know. It left a bad taste in my mouth. We just have a speech about this freaking archetypal, never mind archival, archetypal argument at the core of our Constitution.
Yeah, they definitely towed the ocean so much with that instead of just plunging right in and getting into the depths of it. I mean, even you're going down the U.S. v. Virginia, you're hearing her dissent. You're hearing the Hobby Lobby case. You're hearing her dissent. You're going down the list. Shelby County v. Holder, when she had to become pretty much the anti-SCOTUS, when she was so used to being the progressive voice and part of the majority. Now we have the story arc of her being the dissent all the time, which was usually Scalia's position, blah, blah, blah. And you're right there. It's right there for you. Talk about why she did these things and felt this way outside of our assumption and our knowledge that she's the progressive one that's going to always fight for women's rights.
Again, if you're concerned with conflict, if you're concerned with, you know, storytelling more than you're concerned with tribute, you would have dove into that, Michael. Your entire third act would have been fucking ominous, and it would have been something that we would not have a feel-good feeling leaving this movie. And
honestly, maybe as progressives, we shouldn't, to be honest. Huh? You know what I mean? Like, we're not, the progressives don't own the court right now. They're certainly not in power in any of the branch of government outside the House.
And this movie's like an oasis, which is fine. And it's a feel-good oasis, but it's pretty dire right now. And it's the court is predominantly conservative.
This could have been such a rallying cry for a call to action, too, amongst progressives. And it really, it's more like self-gratification, to be honest. It's just self-pleasure. Like, you're doing the right thing if you're a progressive.
Well, it's a tribute. And I get that. It's just, I think there's a lot of missed opportunities with diving into the conflict. We don't get the stakes.
I'm with you. And it was disappointing. And that's kind of where maybe it's why I have a lower grade than expected, because I was disappointed by that. That's what I was expecting. If you have access to one of the greatest legal minds in the history of this country, throw out some lobs out there. You know, I mean, we know she's this hero for women's rights, this hero for gender equality. She's been on the bench with some massively important decisions.
Now, some of the best stuff in terms of my best scene is probably that first court case recap where she speaks at the Supreme Court for the first time, because you actually get a through line. Again, it's episodic, but you get the through line with that first court case where she's talking about her strategy going in and how she's going to lay out her argument with no questions. And she comments on that. I had no questions. You get some inside baseball with the fact that she's wondering if they're just humoring her or if she's telling them something that they've never heard before. Her mindset as somebody who's teaching. She's like, I had to take the mindset of a teacher. Because maybe these great men don't understand what's happening.
This was one of the highlights, too, in that her strategic mind, that taking all these massive cases, first of all, asking someone to speak at any Supreme Court. I have friends who have done it, and I'm in awe of them, just as I would be in awe of her speaking at SCOTUS, because it is a terrifying notion to me and a lot of lawyers. But she not only was able to do that well enough to become a justice, but she laid groundwork for her own precedent to reflect to and react to in further cases, right, purposefully.
And it's amazing that she took the cases at the beginning, and they give you this groundwork that she took those cases on purpose to go to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And it was great color commentary by all of her colleagues saying, we pretty much wanted to take over cases that would get there.
She was shown in that as a true progressive and a true fighter for equal rights. That not only, you know, this is ridiculous that you would think if she was fighting just for women, she would be biased, but it shows even if you have that viewpoint, she did fight for men too in certain cases.
And what was cool in a way to kind of bookend the movie were two really good episodes of conflict and you know, overcoming the stakes of the situation. You had that situation where she's getting nominated to the Supreme Court, but again, they kind of pull their punches a little bit because it's all very positive.
Orrin Hatch was the lone Republican senator they talked to, and he was just glowing.
Gushing about her.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton's like, I wanted to nominate her 15 minutes in. But the thing was, like, she was going to be 20th on the list. At least they're sewing in contact there. I loved watching that whole episode in terms of anecdotes or whatever you want to call it within this documentary. I mean, it's like you feel great afterwards.
Yeah, but it felt like an episode of like biography from A&E, you know? Right. Like how it's supposed to be nothing but supposed. Is that a word, SP? How it's supposed to be nothing but complimentary and really reflective like that. Again, it's all in the way you want to view it through what lens you want to view it through. If you were here for the conflict, if you're here to create like legal theory like I was at the start, no. But if you're okay with getting... if you're okay with watching propaganda, essentially, I think it's a fine enough doc.
Yes, and it gives you the history. I just wish I got more of a story.
Yeah,
and
I think that's
the
fair.
Bottom line is, I think they were put into a very difficult position as documentarians to have to create a 97 minutes worth of a through line in the schedule that they had. It's almost impossible to me.
I think that's more than fair. Yeah, sure.
And basically they planned events with her, like going to the gym. Like they planned all those events there. She's got them on the schedule and they're allowing the crew to just hang out with her. And here you just you don't have a lot of time to question and to pry and like the more inside baseball, the better this movie would have been. Like there's that scene in the beginning, like I talked about, loved it so much because you get inside her brain and they take you through the process.
Yeah. I don't think you said anything wrong. I just think I think the inception of this film was to never do that anyway. I think this was supposed to be a puff piece and was supposed to be something glorifying a hero who was basically a hero.
And on that note, we get all the pop culture stuff with the SNL to the t-shirts to the new book. You get the young female attorneys idolizing her. It is like a movement. She's a celebrity. You see all the interviews of her being front and center.
Really
and,
cool stuff.
And having a presence on stage and being funny, and even like her husband was funny. She's funny now on stage.
Yeah.
She's getting up there and making people laugh like crazy. She's that freaking quick to this day where she's able to improv off of lines that people get to make people laugh. She was never a comedian. She was never that way based on this documentary, right? And now she's up there hamming it up for crowds. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, she really is something else.
And it's like a tribute to her husband. So it's really heartwarming in that way as well. And then we finish the movie, Michael. And Jennifer Hudson's I'll Fight is like the best anthem of the year in terms of anthems.
Sure.
It's been in my head all day for a reason, and it's just, it's awesome.
We should go protest something.
I usually click off the click off the credits, especially for documentaries. Usually it's a
fucking
thing. Violin.
Yeah.
Because we watch all these Oscar documentaries, and it's just like, oh my God, I never feel worse.
That song is stunning.
I never feel worse than after leaving the documentary short films at the movie theaters or watching it on TV, wherever I watch, I never feel worse than after I do that. That is the worst I will feel all year long, Michael, and I dread doing that again this year. That's the short subjects, but a lot of the feature lengths do the same thing, and this is not the case. We got movies that are just heartwarming and inspiring and really feel good this year. And this one is probably one of the tops on that list. So if you want that feeling, you're a liberal, maybe a lawyer, this is a movie to see.
Yeah, I agree. You took the words out of my mouth, and that it is worth staying through the credits for the Jennifer Hudson song, which is quite amazing and worthy of acclaim. This movie, the documentary itself, is probably worthy of an Oscar nomination that it's likely going to get anyway, because it is an uplifting for so many people. And there is, look, there's a time and a place for this Oasis type filmmaking.
I'll talk about it in category reviews. I got to look back at my list. It's probably fighting for fifth place.
I would say it's probably about where I am too.
I don't know if it's quite there yet. I got a couple movies that I really, really liked. And again, this one, my issues with it are not really entertainment based. Like, I'm entertained as hell.
Right.
I loved rewatching this twice. This is a fun time.
Probably a fair conclusion. A movie, so what's your grade?
B86. I think it fits with a lot of those. I enjoyed myself. Michael?
Perfect 3-point curve. 83, B minus, B, okay. B minus. Yeah, that's, you know, if I think something is propaganda, I think it means it's a little heavy handed. So that's where I fall on it. I don't know. I want to know what you guys think for sure, especially if you don't happen to agree. If you find yourself more moderate than liberal or conservative, I'd love to know your take on this. Let us know what you thought about this documentary. Do you think it's going to be nominated in the Oscars, or do you think it was rightfully nominated above Won't You Be My Neighbor for the BAFTAs? We'd love to hear all that and more from you. We can reach out to us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We're available everywhere you hear podcasts: SoundCloud, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, I don't know, whatever. Just type in Mike and Oscar.
You'll see us everywhere.
Mike, this great legal, theological debate that we just had. Words of wisdom here today?
Jennifer Hudson's got all my words of wisdom. Just listen to that song.
Fair enough, guys. Reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us, and we will see you soon.
See you. So I